Let's read together Proverbs chapter 21, verses 1 through 15. Here in this first half of Proverbs 21, we have more proverbs for living a life that is both practical and pleasing to God. Now, for background, let's go to verse 9. Better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Now, what do you visualize when you read this proverb? Do you picture a man perched precariously on the peak of the roof of his house, about to slide down and fall off? Obviously, the background note that is helpful here is that in Bible days, the houses had flat roofs, not pointed roofs. The people could not only walk around on their rooftops, but sometimes they built small rooms on part of the roof. Remember the prophet's chamber where Elisha stayed? That was a rooftop room. I'm reading from 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning with verse 8. Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small room on the roof, and let us put a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." From 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. Now let's look at this proverb once again. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 9. Better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a roof shared with a contentious woman. The point of this proverb is not to in any way suggest divorce or separation. No. The point is that rather than argue and quarrel and fight, it is better for a husband and wife to put some distance between themselves until emotions settle down. This is very good practical advice because no couple has the perfect marriage. Well, so much for background. Let's move now to our doctrinal point. Once again, for Proverbs. The Proverbs are wise advice for everyday living. Verse 1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. Just as a farmer channels and regulates the flow of water for his crops, so God controls kings on behalf of his people. We have plenty of biblical examples of this proverb. Think of Pharaoh at the time of the Exodus. Think of Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4, humbled before God. Think of Cyrus and his edict permitting the Jews to return home from their Babylonian captivity. Think of Xerxes or Ahasuerus at the time of Esther and Artaxerxes at the time of Nehemiah. I'm reading from Ezra chapter 6, verse 22. And they kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord made them joyful and turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. From Ezra chapter 6, verse 22. Can the Lord still move the hearts of kings and rulers on behalf of his people? Can the Lord still move the heart of local officials or school authorities on behalf of his people? Can the Lord still move the heart of your boss or your spouse or people in authority over you in the right direction? Of course he can. And he does so in his sovereign ways. Verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. This proverb has both the good news and the bad news. The bad news is obvious. You may be wearing a pretty good mask and convincing yourself and others that you're just a wonderful person, but your heart is filled with pride and jealousy and angry plans. The good news is that if you're really trying to do the right thing, the Lord sees your heart, even though other folks don't appreciate your efforts. Verse 3, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Under the Old Testament law, when people did wrong, they brought a sacrifice to the temple. Now, some people got the wrong idea that it was okay to do wrong as long as you later brought a sacrifice. Nothing could be further from the truth. Remember what the prophet Samuel said to King Saul, who wrongly sacrificed before Samuel came. I'm reading 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. So Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams." From 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. The same is true today. Inward devotion is far more important to the Lord than outward ritual. Baptism, for example, means nothing if there is no true belief. Verse 4, a haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. Now, some translations say, as I've read, "and the plowing of the wicked are sin," and some translations say, "the lamp of the wicked is sin." The point of this proverb seems to be that the sin of the wicked is not only their haughty looks or outward expression of pride and their inward unseen proud hearts, but everything they do is sinful because pride is what motivates them and guides them. Verse 5, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty surely to poverty." Remember, this is a proverb, a general truth stated in general terms. In general, if you work hard and plan out your work and count the cost, you will prosper. And in general, if you make hasty, spur-of-the-moment decisions without counting the cost and without having any plan of action, you will not prosper. And this proverb certainly applies to more than just business ventures, marriage and family and ministry decisions, for example. Verse 6, "Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death." Now, there are several translations of this proverb, but the point seems to be that if you seek riches dishonestly, you will never reach your goal and you will die in the process of trying. Have you ever seen a satisfied and fulfilled, corrupt, rich person? No way. Verse 7, "The violence of the wicked will destroy them because they refuse to do justice." Notice two things that are said here about the wicked who are in view in this proverb. Number one, they deliberately do violence to others. And number two, they refuse to do what's right. These are not sins of ignorance. God's moral law, which he has set in place in his moral universe, is that the wicked will never ultimately get away with their violent acts. And in some cases, they will be trapped in their own violent acts. Verse 8, "The way of a guilty man is perverse, but as for the pure, his work is right." Behavior reveals character. That's the point of this proverb. True character is not always immediately obvious. But with time, a person's pattern of behavior will reveal his or her true character, either perverse and unrighteous or pure and upright. Verse 10, "The soul of the wicked desire evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes." This is not the kind of person you want for your neighbor. Some people are addicted to evil and will hurt you and take advantage of you, even if they know you and live next door to you. Verse 11, "When the scoffer is punished, the simple is made wise, but when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge." Wise people learn through instruction. That's all that's needed. But simple folk learn through example. When they see scoffers and mockers punished, they learn quickly. Verse 12, "The righteous God wisely considers the house of the wicked, overthrowing the wicked for their wickedness." Now, some of your translations have "righteous one" capitalized, referring to God and not just a righteous human judge. Only God knows everything about the house of the wicked, and he knows when and how to tear it down. We can leave this judgment in the hands of God, as Romans chapter 12, verse 19 says, "Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." Romans 12, 19. Verse 13, "Whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard." What goes around comes around is not a Bible verse, but it is a biblical principle, and it works both ways. If you are generous and giving with your time and money and talent in helping to meet the needs of hurting people, in general, folks will help you when you're hurting. But if you are stingy and miserly and mean, don't expect folks to run to your aid when you're in trouble or when you're in need. Verse 14, we will look at this proverb under our practical application. Verse 15, "It is a joy for the just to do justice, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity." How do you respond to justice? Does it give you joy to do the right thing and see the vindication of those who are in the right? I love it when court cases are decided in favor of those who did the right thing. And I love it when the wrongdoers do not get off by some legal loophole. Those workers of iniquity deserve destruction. The Proverbs are wise advice for everyday living. And that brings us now to our practical application. Distinguish between bribes and gifts. Distinguish between bribes and gifts. Verse 14, once again, "A gift in secret pacifies anger, and a bribe behind the back strong wrath." Now, most commentators interpret this verse as neither condemning nor condoning the practice, but just stating the facts and the way it is in life. That is, money talks. By definition, bribery is always wrong. That is, to induce someone to do wrong by offering them money or some other benefit. But now what about giving someone a secret gift to do what is right or to subdue anger and wrath and thus avoid problems, maybe even disaster? Is that wrong? No, I don't think so. And the Hebrew word that's used for bribe here, as we explained back in chapter 17, can include gifts which are not used in a bad way. Illustration. On one of our Holy Land tours, I got permission from the maitre d' of our crowded hotel to invite some Christian friends from Nazareth to join us for dinner. But the maitre d' said we could only have four guests because of the crowded conditions in the dining room. The Nazareth delegation showed up with eight guests. Oh no, what do I do? It's amazing what 50 American dollars slipped into the hand of a maitre d' can do. He squeezed all eight guests in with no problem. This was not a bribe to do wrong, but a motivating gift to make room. Distinguish between bribes and gifts.